One of the unique aspects of Hanukkah for women, and this is one of the opening comments that the Shulchan Aruch makes, is that there is that while the candles are lit, there's an Isur Melacha. It means that women should not. That while the candles are lit, the first half hour the candles are lit, women should not do anything which is very laborious. Women should not do do the wash, things of that nature, whether it's sewing, those kinds of things. And the reason for that is that we want to show that the candles are beginning with the good news. The reason for that is we want to show that the candles are set aside and they're only for show. As we say in Haneres Halolo, that Ein Lanu Rishus L'Hishtarnesh Bem. We want to show that they're set aside just to give thanks to Ribono Shelolam. We're not using them as extra lights in the house. That's the reason that we have the Shamas. The Shamas is there also to have one other candle, so that if a person would end up using the lights of the Ner of Hanukkah, we would attribute it to the Ner of the Shamas. That's why nowadays, that we have so much electric light, we probably don't need the Shamas mitzvah din. We're probably just using it because that was the minog. So we want to show that the candles are set aside for ceremonial purposes, so therefore we don't do melacha, at least for the first half hour, because that was the original halacha, was the candles only lit for half an hour. And why was it that women were chosen to be the ones who would demonstrate the uniqueness of the candles? So that's what the Svarim points out, because women have a special hand in the miracle of Hanukkah. The two, that's what the Gemara says, Afen hayu ba'osaneis, that women were...
God said that we don't have any napkins.
That the women were not only involved in the Nes of Hanukkah, but women were specifically touched by the Nes of Hanukkah. How were they touched by the Nes of Hanukkah? So there are two versions of this. One version is the Gemara tells us, I'm not sure exactly when these things happened, but the Gemara says that there were periods of time where various governors, non-Jewish governors over the land of Israel, would make rules that any woman who's about to get married first had to be intimate with the governor. Such a Gemara at the beginning of Ksuvus. Historically, it's a little bit hard to figure exactly when these things took place, but some Svarim suggest that one of the periods of time when this took place was during the Greek time. And therefore, since women were particularly threatened during the period of that were under Greek governance, so the miracle of the Maccabim had a special relevance for women. That's one approach that we find in the Svarim. The other approach that we find, which is the one that's more popular, because this is what we discuss when kids are young, is that Yael helped in securing the victory for the Maccabim by taking one of the Greek generals aside and by seducing him with milk and getting him to be sleepy and drowsy and ultimately decapitating him. So because women were touched by the nest, by the aggravation that the Greeks gave us, and in addition, they were involved in bringing about the miracle, so women have a special place in Nes Hanukkah, and therefore the minhag developed that the way to show that the candle is set aside specifically for ceremonial purposes to give thanks to Hashem evolved around women, and therefore there's this minhag that women should abstain from any very difficult work while the candle, even if they're not doing it in the precincts of the candle, even if they're doing it in a different room. There was a suggestion we find in the Svarim that women should not do work the entire day of Hanukkah. So that many Svarim point out the Chacham Tzvi, and others say that is not a good minhag. That's a bad minhag. That's a minhag cause of the mistake. So that's where the why they say it's a mistake. Not stuff that they didn't want their wives to have a break, but they thought that having too much time in one's hand is not a good thing. The Mishnah says that not being productive leads to shimba, leads to being bored. Being bored leads to other problems. So therefore, they had a whole day vacation that would not be productive, would not be good. This idea that women have a specific involvement in the nation celebration of Hanukkah, so that comes up in the formulation of halacha as well. And that's why women are equally involved, they're equally obligated in the Neiros of Hanukkah as men are, just like women are equally obligated in Mikra Megillah, equally obligated in celebrating the days of Yetzias Mitzrayim, so too women are equally obligated in celebrating the miracle of Hanukkah. So the question comes up, why is it that probably the broader minhag of Klal Yisrael is that married women don't like the Ner Hanukkah, don't like the menorah. There are women who do like the menorah of Hanukkah even after being married, and there are women who will like the Ner Hanukkah when they're single, but when they get married will no longer like the Ner Hanukkah. And that's probably the broader minhag. Both minhagim can be well substantiated, but the broader minhag of Klal Yisrael is that women would not like the Ner Hanukkah. Sounds contraindicating. We just said that and now we're saying that the broader meaning is they don't like their own menorah, that they are involved in the menorah of the family. So here there are two interpretations. There's no question that women are equally obligated, and there's no question if a woman is single, then she has to light the menorah. And there's no question that if her husband is traveling in a different place, that she has to light the menorah. There's no question about that. And there's no question that a woman fulfills her obligation completely and fully with having her husband light the menorah. That's the phrase, ner ishuveso, that the mitzvah is to light the Hanukkah menorah for the home. And now we have a heder mitzvah that everybody lights their own ner Hanukkah. But the ikar mitzvah is one candle per night, per home. And then there's a heder mitzvah that we light the candle per day, and then we light every individual who's involved in the household lights their own menorah. That's a heder mitzvah, that is doing the mitzvah in a much, much nicer way. So then the question comes up, so why shouldn't women do the mitzvah in the best possible way and light their own menorah? See, there are two theories that were given. One theory is the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer reminds us that Neiros Hanukkah originally were lit outside. Neiros Hanukkah originally lit at the doorpost outside facing the crowd. There's a debate as to exactly where they were lit. Were they lit at one's doorstep, or were they lit at the step of the chotzer? In other words, if you think about the Yerushalayim, where they still light outside, and think about the way the homes are designed in Me'ah Shearim and in Geula, sometimes you'll go off a road and trip into a chotzer, into a courtyard. And around the courtyard there'll be numerous homes. So there's a debate amongst the Rishonim whether one lights the menorah at one's doorstep inside the courtyard, or does one light one's menorah as one's doorstep trips into the road. But in modern times, we would have the following. In modern times, maybe if you think of the State Street apartments, but today it's still probably a chotzer, but you have many, many apartments around the courtyard. Maybe Westgate is a better example. So that would be the same, that might be a similar question, or an apartment building. Who lives in an apartment building, so one also has to raise the question that where is, do we light, if we originally had the original din, would be light in where our doors open up to the hallway, or where the hallway opens up to the lobby into the front, into the front street. Right, nowadays, we light at home. We light within our own homes. But in the Gemara's time, until it probably goes till, not for a very long period of time, probably for maybe 200 years, everybody lit outside. And then probably once we came under the rule of the Persians, we stopped lighting outside, because the Persians, they served different forms of light and dark. And Hanukkah often came out to be around the same time as one of their holidays. And during their holidays, in order to serve light appropriately, all the homes had to be dark, and you had to go into the Zoroastrian temple and serve. So we didn't follow their religion. However, we were, it was prohibited that any lights going on at all within one's home when there was a Zoroastrian holiday. So therefore, there was a period of time, probably in the Gemara's time already, so that's maybe a few hundred years after the miracle of Hanukkah, maybe 400 years at most, maybe 500, not much more. So we already stopped lighting outside and lit entirely inside in our own homes. But the Chassam Sefer writes that since the original idea of Hanukkah was to light outside your homes, so he envisions that there were people gathering outside who became a commotion. But you can imagine Yerushalayim if you have, if you light, if everybody in the chatzer, everyone in the courtyard is lighting at the same time. So Baruch Hashem, they have large families. So you can imagine that out of the courtyard you'd have easily 30, 40, maybe 50, 60 people easily. So the Chassam Sefer said that once something became so public, so it wasn't appropriate for women to be part of this kind of festivity. So that's what he opines, that maybe that's why over time the idea developed that even the women are equally obligated in the midst of their Hanukkah, but they fulfill their obligation via their husbands lighting the menorah at the step of their homes. So the question is, but the Chassam Sefer lived in the early 1800s, late 1700s. By his time, people had been lighting inside for centuries. Right? So why didn't things change? But the Chassam Sefer argues that it just didn't change at all. The minhag was established and the minhag didn't change. One of his Talmidim, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, this is a Talmud several generations later, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld was the Rav of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. Right, he was the counterpart, let's say, now of Tuvia Weiss, head of Eid HaRedis. He was one of the first Rabbanim, who was the same time as Rav Kook. So he suggested that that's why another quirk that we had, that women don't say Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana is a very pretty bracha that we say on the newness of the moon. There's no reason why women should not say Kiddush Levana. So he suggests, maybe it's the same thing. Kiddush Levana developed, the people said it as part of a group. That part of Kiddush Levana is to remind ourselves of the way we used to be sanctify the moon in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So that was done in the Beis HaMikdash. It's part of a much larger commotion. This maybe it's the same thing, that since it developed as a public mitzvah, so women were not, at that time, were not part of a public commotion. So therefore they weren't part of the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana. So that's one opinion, that's one theory, that the Chassam Sefer says, that's how this practice evolves. That even though women are so involved in the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah, that even if a special minhag of not doing malacha, and they're equally obligated, nevertheless, they fulfill their obligation via their husbands because they didn't want to be involved in the public promotion of letting the menorah itself. The other theory is, and this is suggested by the Mishneh Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, and goes back to a few generations before, to the Sefer called the Elia Rabba, he suggests that there is one unique aspect of Neres Hanukkah. The unique aspect is that Neres Hanukkah is a home mitzvah. There are very, very few home mitzvahs. Mezuzah is a home mitzvah. Building a makkah, building a fence around a drop and around a ledge is a home mitzvah. It's very hard to identify maybe Leil Seder. Considered to be like a family mitzvah. Shabbos candles is probably the only other example of very, which is exactly like Neres Hanukkah, right? That it's a mitzvah that is defined as do it in your home, right? So therefore the suggestion is, and this applies to Neres Shabbos as well in the reverse, that this is a place where we say Ishta Kegufo, right? Ishta Kegufo on Hanukkah and Bala Kegufo on Shabbos, right? Ishta Kegufo means that it's one body. One unit, a husband and wife are one unit. So it's a halacha that we apply every so often. We apply it, let's say we apply that Taras Nadarm for Shem, Ram Neiram. So there we ask the husbands to take care of the obligation of freeing any of ourselves from any kinds of vows. So there, but it's an unusual thing that a mitzvah evolves over time and we apply this rule of Isha Kegufay, of Bala Kegufa. It's rare. However, we do find it in a mitzvah that is associated with the home itself. So it's conceivable that that's what happened over here. Since the mitzvah was defined as a home mitzvah, so when something's defined as being part of the home, that's what makes a lot of sense to say, that's what we'll apply the rule, the Isha Kegufa. Right? We're displaying that the home is a home where we're celebrating a Kadosh Baruch Hu's miracle done for Klal Yisrael. So if the home is celebrating it, so it makes sense that the two principal parts of the home, husband and wife, should do it together. Right? That might be again, how it evolved. Again, none of these reasons are, I would say, are overly compelling, right? And that's why we began by saying that there are different customs. And therefore, if a family's custom is that the husband and wives light separately, that's entirely acceptable. We're trying to figure out why the broader custom developed that husbands and wives light together. So that's what I would think that the suggestion of the Eliyahu Rabba, the Mishnah Berurah, is not compelling. Two minhagim are still two good minhagim, but that might be sound very reasonable, and that would apply even though times have changed and we're lighting inside. There's this, probably a similar model you have in Allah, but also an interesting model, and that is the saying of Birchas Hagomo. It's also very relevant. When somebody is saved either from being in prison, Rahman al-Islam, or someone is saved from a very serious illness, Rahman al-Islam, or somebody travels, different discussions of what that's called, but traveling, let's say, so it's clear if you take a boat overseas, that's clear, you say Birchas Hagomel. I would think, I mean, if you fly overseas, you say Birchas Hagomel as well. So Birchas Hagomel is a bracha that is said publicly, it requires a minyan, and it's a bracha giving thanks to Hashem. Now, over time, it evolved that women sometimes hesitate from making the bracha, even though it's a bracha that should equally come for men and women. Over time, for some reason, as a woman is given birth to a child, so a woman should say, Birchas Hagomel. The woman had a difficult situation, was in a car accident, God forbid, and came out Baruch Hashem, so she made Birchas Hagomel. So the Mishnah Berurah points out that very often, what it evolved over time is that men say it for their wives. So he has several justifications. Somebody says, well, a husband is almost equally, perhaps equally, maybe even greater, more grateful when his wife gets cured. So when he says the bracha, he's not saying the bracha just for saying the bracha for himself as well. So that's the Birchas Hagomel. Husband and wife, they're in it together. Each of the gufo. So therefore, the husband can make the bracha more or less for himself, but he's saying it for his wife as well. There's a preference that if we take that approach, that his wife should be in shul at the same time, and actually hear her husband making the bracha on his behalf. But that's also it could be a similar idea. Birchas Hagomel is a bracha that's said publicly, and it's a bracha that a husband and wife can say equally for each other. So therefore, it evolved over time that the husband says for the wife. First, my preference, as many of you know, is that a woman should say it on her own, because Birchas Hagomel we say it for ourselves, and if a woman is comfortable saying it in front of a minion, so I think that that's the original approach. We all say our own brachos. So that's my own preference, if a woman is comfortable, to get a minyan together and to say Birchas Hagomel. But you see, it's almost a parallel idea, that something was done publicly, and husbands and wives were seen as one unit. So it evolved, there was some people have a preference, and again, not a compelling preference, but an existing preference, for men to do the mitzvah on behalf of their wives, right? Now that then evolves into the next question. What about a single woman? So a single woman, I think, should light the menorah on her own. There are people who say they shouldn't do that, and that really depends on which theory you take. Even if the Chasam Sofer's theory, right, that a woman shirks from doing something that was publicly, so then my 16, 17-year-old daughter, I should also not want it to be in this public commotion. So she should light, she should work with my lots of scenarios. If on the other hand, it's a question of Isha Kagufo, so then that doesn't apply to a single woman, she should light her own menorah. Then the question is, what about a girl who's below the age of chinuch? Should they light the menorah or not? Same issue. If you believe that you're below age of chinuch will never light her own menorah, because your practice is that she won't light when she's 16 or 17, right? The only thing she may light later on, maybe, is a period of time when she's not at home, when she's not married, so we would not be mechanech, we don't do chinuch for circumstances, we do chinuch for mainstream situation. On the other hand, if you understand that the reason why women don't light their own menorahs is because they're seen as one unit with their husband, so then we would encourage a girl of 16 or 17 to light, and we would encourage a girl below the age of chinuch also to light. Practically speaking, when it comes to issues of chinuch and also adolescent young men and women, So nowadays, I think it's in our best interest, in terms of chinuch, not to make unnecessary distinctions between boys and girls. You have a 12-year-old boy and a 10-year-old girl. You have a 15-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl. So there's no reason that there's so many situations where al kidin we do give greater emphasis and effort, visible effort, to our boys as opposed to our girls. So here, there's no reason why one should take that approach. That's why I would think that when a girl is below the age of bas mitzvah, she should light her own menorah, as her brothers do. And when she's over the age of bas mitzvah, she should light as her brothers do. And then, if it's when she gets married, if her family minhag is to light on her own, then she should light on her own. It'd be an interesting question if the husband left the screen in a minhag. We'll leave that for a different time. And otherwise, then she would become part of her husband's menorah. Good, Sarah?
The latter rationale, the mitzvah on the bayit, would be stronger if it weren't for the fast fast. There is a Hebrew mitzvah for additional menorahs. Right, right. So if it's a mitzvah on the family, on the bayit, right, and if we would never suggest that the whole family be lighting Shabbos candles, that would be like an absurd suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone was making brachos, I'm sure there would be like a little Kala issue, serious coming up. But yeah, we're saying
All the girls.
So in light of that,
I agree that the reason is not a compelling reason. The sense of it would be, that the Heder mitzvah never did away with the idea that it is assigned as a home mitzvah, identified as a home mitzvah. The Heder mitzvah is, what you think is correct, the Heder mitzvah is that every member of the household lights their own menorah. Nevertheless, it's still defined as something that I do at home. I wouldn't be able to light a menorah in somebody else's house if I'm not staying there. Right? I wouldn't be able, that would not make any sense for me to light a menorah over here. So it's still identified as a home mitzvah. So, it still makes sense that a home mitzvah would conjoin husband and wife, right? But I agree, it's not a compelling mitzvah, and I don't think there's any basis in any way to criticize a woman who likes her own menorah, and I would encourage, if a woman has that minhag, I would encourage her to maintain the minhag.
So a single woman who is not technically yotzei with ishto kukufo,
right,
her father,
right,
would she have to divorce Kuta?
If she's living at home, if you have a situation where you have a college age girl and she's not living at home, so then she has to light her own menorah. If she's living at home, and one has the minhag that single women don't light their own menorah, then she's fulfilling the ikar hadin neri shebeisa, right? Does she have to participate? No. As long as she's part of the household, she needs to participate. The only time that a person has to participate in somebody, has to actively participate, they're not part of the household. Right? For example, if I'm the guest from someone else's home, and I'm not letting my own menorah, so then the halacha is, I'm a guest, so I should give a quarter to tonight's candles. That's because I'm not a guest. I'm a guest. This is not my home. So how do I become part of their menorah? If I'm part of the home, I'm living there for even for several days, right? So I'm in there for a longer period of time. So then I fulfill my obligation with them. There. All right. The next question that sometimes comes up and is very much related to this is sort of what if situation. What if the family cannot be together for the lighting of the candles? Right, what happens if usually your husband comes home to light the candles and he won't be home till very late tonight? So in that kind of what a situation. So first let me preface it by saying that I think to have families lighting together is a value more so in the Rosh Chanukah than other areas of halacha, because it is a home mitzvah. For example, how does this become easily discernible? we always believe in doing the mitzvah as soon as we can. As soon as you do the mitzvah, as soon as you can do the mitzvah. When it comes to Neres Chanukah, so as soon as it's Seif HaKochovim, the time for Matzoi Shabbos, I would say the ideal is to light the menorah right then. Right, that would be the ideal time. Certainly, in the times when they used to light the menorah for people outside, so you'd want to catch the busiest time outside, and traditionally the busiest time outside was just as it was getting dark, because people could no longer work at their stores, so when they close their stores, close their professions and head out home. So the rush hour in the time up till modern times was always just the first half hour got dark, and a half hour later, the streets were empty. So when Chazal first made this din of lighting Neres Chanukah, the first half hour was crucial. And to the extent that some say, even Neves Marav later on, if you have a half hour, light the menorah of Chanukah. That's the last half hour, and you should light this half hour. So during that period of time, until recently, so we always emphasize speed over anything else. So if this was before modern times, and the husband was going to be late, he'd only get home 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. So then there's no question that the family has to light the menorah for him. By the time he comes home, there's no mitzvah anymore, no one's in the streets anymore. So no question, the family lights. And then we say, Ba'alo kegufa. She would light the menorah, and her husband fulfills his obligation through his wife on the menorah. That would be the halacha. Nowadays, what's changed nowadays is that the rush hour is much later. Right? So they used to say that in modern times there were two rush hours. There's the business rush hour and the entertainment rush hour. So the business rush hour is, I'm not even sure when it is now, probably the 5, 6, 7, right? And the entertainment rush hour is maybe 10, 11 or something. So nowadays, in our community, we have a reverse situation. A person rushes home to light the candle at 5 o'clock, there's no one in the streets, maybe school buses, right? No one else is coming home at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, right? So nowadays, the idea of rushing during the first half hour, it's hard to really defend it. And if a person would rush, we would want them also to light and have it last longer as well, to catch some traffic. But the question is, well, so what's more important? Lighting at, let's say, 5:15, 5:30 in the evening, right? Half of the family might be home, maybe the kids won't be home yet. Right, but you do the mitzvah as soon as you can, zvizim akim le mitzvah, right? Or is it better to light when the family will be together? So the family will light as a family. So I would think that it's preferable to light as a family, even though it means waiting a little bit longer, because we have that luxury right now, because we're not under this half-hour gun, you got it in the first half-hour. We can light later on as well. So I think that since it's defined as a family mitzvah, the whole mitzvah, that we can argue in this case is the value to have the family lighting by itself, and to wait till the family gets together within reason. And the Mishnah even makes a comment of that sort also, that having the family together is a value in this mitzvah. So the way that plays itself out is that if the family will come together at 7, 8 o'clock, it makes sense to wait till 7 o'clock in my mind. If you're going to have one of the children will only get home 9, 10 o'clock, so I wouldn't say, that's not wait. Then have the family light at an earlier time, and then the one child that gets home later will light on their own. Right? They're not mechuyev to light on their own, because the family lit, right? But they can, and they can light with their bracha. So when it comes to how long do we wait, so the same thing would apply over here. You have to make a judgment call. Let's say when the husband's only going to get home at 9 o'clock, 9:30. And by then the younger kids are going to be sleeping. So again, Baruch Hashem, this year we're beginning, we have a Friday night, and let's say Shabbos and a Sunday, so we hit the deck running, Baruch Hashem. The first time it comes up is already Monday. But then once he makes, I kind of have to figure out, make a judgment call. That if one's husband will be home and the kids will still be up, so then it makes sense to wait. Again, within reason, I say too late. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock makes sense. If when husband's coming home much later, and the kids are going to miss their father's halakha anyways, so then, to me, it would make sense for one's wife to light the menorah with the children, and the husband has a choice later on. If he wants, he can light. If he wants, he didn't light. As long as he knows what he's doing early on. If he hasn't made up his mind early on, then he cannot light later on with the bracha because he's fulfilled his obligations through you. If he's made up his mind early on that he is going to light later on, then he can light with the bracha later on. But let's say husband thinks he won't be home till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Right? He's going to be on call the entire night. So he says, look, he's not going to be home tonight. So he asks you to light on his behalf, light for the family. So then, even if he gets off early, he can't light with the bracha anymore because his obligation has been taken care of and done. It's only if he, in his own mind, he says, I'm going to be the mahadrin tonight. So then he can opt to do the mahadrin of lighting his own menorah. Right. So again, so coming back to the point that we're making, is that when it comes to Neres Chanukah, even though when it was originally established, this idea of Zrizin Matim Lemitzvah, as soon as he can, and it was even more pressing than others, Zrizin, because he had only a half hour to do the mitzvah, and that was more important than almost any other criteria, now that we are lighting primarily for insight, and now that we have the rush hours are throughout the entire night. People are always in the street. So then we are allowed the luxury of lighting later. So then the value of this family lighting together, I think, is a significant criteria. Now, again, what I say, we should keep the kids awake. Not necessarily. Does it mean that we should wait till 10 o'clock at night? Not necessarily, but it certainly makes sense to light when a good part of the family is together. And that's the idea of singing most surah together, and it was a level because lighting the menorah is the mitzvah, right? That's the, however, sitting around looking at the candles, it's also part of the mitzvah. It's a different category. The mitzvah is to light, but there are many svarim that suggest. Rav Moshe Shturmbach quoted one of his svarim. I usually mention it Friday night that there is that some of the texts say that, but it's one of the nice things to do. A good thing to do is to look at the menorah. The purpose is to think about the miracle Hashem gave us. So it's not just a question of lighting and like to light and to leave. It's to light and to sit around a little bit. That's why I think that's how the whole poem of Moed Tzur came about. Right? The whole poem of Moed Tzur was to have a little bit of waiting time, so to speak. A little bit of a few moments where the family just spent some time enjoying the neighbors. This raises another question as well, and that is that generally speaking, we don't do things, if they have a time-bound mitzvah, we don't engage in anything else which may end up causing us to maybe forget to do the mitzvah. So we don't engage in anything which is an engaging activity. We don't, for example, have a significant meal. I'm supposed to do a mitzvah, I'm supposed to daven shacharis, so I don't have a meal before shacharis. That's one of the reasons. There's another reason that it would be arrogant or haughty for a person to say, I'll take care of myself first and I'll ask God to take care of me. So therefore we say, you know, first you say, speak to God to take care of us, and then we take care of ourselves. But let's say it's mincha maru, or let's say it's any other mitzvah that is a mitzvah overus that is somewhat time-bound, so we don't engage it, we don't sit down and have a meal before that. Right? That's the rule. So the general practice is one does not sit down and have a meal before lighting the menorah Chanukah. However, in the situations that we mentioned, for example, where you're waiting for the family to get together, or in other words, it's 6, 7 o'clock, and you made a decision that when the family comes together, that's when you light the menorah. When your husband comes home, you light the menorah. In that case, when it's allowed, many of the posts say from Azaman amongst them, that one's wife is allowed and is allowed to eat before them. You can eat, you can see the children before them. And the logic is that you're waiting for a specific event to happen. You're waiting for the family to come together. You're waiting for the children to fill the way that the common minigus is filled. So therefore, one would be allowed to eat. It's always worthwhile to put up some kind of reminder someplace that, yes, the kids, we have to remember eating now, but we have to remember later on before we go to sleep, make sure we light the menorah. But that would be permissible in this situation. That leads to probably the next most common question that's asked, and that is that very often during the course of Chanukah, we have various Chanukah events, right, ranging from children's parties to family get-togethers. Very often the tradition of a certain family is to get together at somebody's house, right? And very often the traditions get together around the time of lighting the menorah. So it happens many, many times. At least, it usually happens at least 70 families at least once during the course of Hanukkah, is that the entire family gets together, and let's say Sunday Hanukkah, so the best thing to get together Sunday Hanukkah is what, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and then to spend time and to have a Hanukkah meal together. So then we run into this problem. I'm at the place, I'm not home right now, right? So I can't light my menorah. I'm at somebody else's house. I'm at my parents', my in-law's house, right? They want to have a Hanukkah meal. That's what we've been doing for many, many years. So now the question is, so now I'm stuck. I can't light my menorah because I'm not home, right? And I shouldn't eat before I light the menorah, so I can't eat, right? So that really is not an earth-shaking problem with somebody else's meal. Unless it's your parents prepared, the grandparents, the whole family gets together for this event, so people get very upset and very offended. Here they wanted to have some time, the whole family gets together, and everybody's sort of on edge, because they all want to get out so they can light in their own home. And so that is an issue, it is a problem. And in situations, and initially, when one is planning events, one should try to plan events so that one can light before one eats, and we can have, there are leniencies. One could even light after sunset, as opposed to waiting until when the stars come up. We our practice is to light sages around 5:15, 5:10 around. That's our common practice. Let's say a person is invited to be someplace at 5 o'clock, 5:10, 5:15. So then, what they could do, and this would be an entirely appropriate thing to do, is to light at sunset, which is around 4:30, 4:20 now. To light at sunset, as long as there's enough oil or enough wax for the candle to last a half hour after, to like 5:45, well, half after it sets, right? Well, this Friday, we're going to light the menorah before sunset even. It's a special din for Shabbos, and it's going to last for a very long time. It'll last till about 5:45. So in this kind of situation, it would be entirely appropriate, because there are those who say one should light around sunset, to light around sunset, if that solves the problem, it's an easy solution. If, by lighting at the ski at 4:30, we can take care of the whole problem, easy solution. If that is not the easy solution, and if one does not have control over the event, and one doesn't have control over the event, and one is going to be in somebody else's place, and they're going to be upset if one's not going to enjoy the family get together, so then there is room to be lenient. One thing to do is to set up a reminder that make sure you don't forget to light the menorah. As you ask your husband or your children, or nowadays you can do with cell phones, you can set your cell phone to a certain alarm that it'll ring at a certain time, right? Or you find out which child really does not want to be there at all, and you tell that child, you remind us, make sure that we light the menorah, we'll remind you every 10 minutes or so, and you gotta get home to light the menorah. So you can build in these kinds of reminders, or you can put a note in the fridge. So so all of these things, a note in one's pillow, to make one, you know, all of them, one reminder, so that is good enough. So that way, even if you get involved in the meal and you're having a great time and you only end up leaving the house much later on, you know you'll get home and you'll light the menorah. There is another approach, and the reason why we can be a little lenient over here, because there is another approach that's being suggested by Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky himself, and that is that since it's a mitzvah which relates to the home, one could argue, there's a debatable argument, but you'll appreciate the issue, one could argue, until I get home, I haven't really, I'm not obligated to the mitzvah, right? There's no obligation for me to put up a mezuzah until I have a house, right? Until I move in. So there's no obligation, the mitzvah to light my menorah at home. Am I obligated to go home in order to be able to light the menorah, right? So I have to, so that, I would argue yes, when it's obligated to go home to light, but there are those who argue otherwise. So again, in this situation, so again, review. The situation where I wasn't able to control the planning of the event, and the situation where if I don't partake in the meal, there'll be people who get upset, they get offended. So then, one could nowadays, because we're lighting primarily for inside the house, and because people are outside for such a long period of time. So nowadays, we can take advantage of some of these leniencies in order that people shouldn't get upset or offended. And as I suggested, the reminder to make sure that we don't forget to let them know.
Well, I made the same suggestion as you did when the father was coming home late by saying that you're waiting for a certain event and
right,
the event is that you're going to come home.
Right, right. So that would be, that ties in with Rabbi Kamenetsky's approach. Right, so the argument would be, well, maybe I'm obligated to get home as soon as I can. That's why there's a little bit. Right. So there we say that because of the circumstance, the only difference in there is that we're assuming that I really have no control over getting home from work at a certain time. Over here, my whole family is sitting right around me.
Control.
Was that?
On Friday, you have control.
So, but essentially, that's, we're arguing a very similar argument. That the event that is obligating you to do the mitzvah hasn't occurred yet. Yeah. And then the then.
But if you have the idea of like the shower shittus, you start shower shittus.
Right.
You continue eating.
Right.
All the way until chatzot.
Correct.
So if you start your meal before, whatever you want to do before chatzot.
Right.
Why,
you keep on going.
Does that work?
Right. The only reason the question is this way. The only reason it doesn't work is because whenever you have a mitzvah, it may be more relevant now than it used to be. The reason why in the Svarim it's not seen as a compelling argument is because Neres Hanukkah are seen as a mitzvah overus. Right? Now, the question is, the halacha is that if I've begun eating, and I should be doing a mitzvah now, if it's a mitzvah derabbanan, I can keep on going. If it's a mitzvah derabbanan, I have to interrupt. Let's say, for example, let's say somebody invites me to a meal on a regular Tuesday evening, and we begin. So if the meal is starting, let's say tonight at 6 o'clock, and I have not yet daven ma'ariv, I have to daven ma'ariv first before I have the meal. Right? If I know this is 10 o'clock minyan, so I can say, right, I'm waiting for 10 o'clock minyan. Good enough. Let's say the meal began at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So if Sarah thing is correct, so 4 o'clock goes by, 5, 6, 7, I haven't done ma'ariv yet. So they have to say, I'm sorry, I got to excuse myself. No, not obligated, right? However, for a mitzvah like Kriya Shema, I do have to interrupt, right? A person Friday night, so we always say Kriya Shema, we often say Kriya Shema too early. You have to repeat Kriya Shema at home. So one should either repeat it before the meal or during the meal, because the mitzvah deraisa, a mitzvah that's been a Torah, one is supposed to interrupt even a meal that began the hetter, right? So why is Neres Hanukkah different? So Sarah's saying, well, why don't we say, as long as we begin the meal before sunset, so eat as long as you want. The only reason why it might be different is because it's a mitzvah overus. Any mitzvah which is a mitzvah which has a certain time boundedness to it, so then we even if you began the meal entirely permissible, in a highly permissible situation, you have to still interrupt. Havdalah not as much as, because Neres Hanukkah originally had a half hour slot to do it.
Okay.
And Havdalah, you could go till at least till midnight, right? And you could even make up for after midnight, right? So that may change nowadays. You could argue that nowadays, Hanukkah also can go as late as Havdalah. So what you're saying is correct, that's an argument that's raised. Why is it not raised as lechatchila, so to speak? Because initially the Neres Hanukkah was seen as a. But you're right that in reevaluating things the way they found nowadays, so there is room for that argument. That's correct. So one of the questions which comes up very frequently then is, now that we discussed being at somebody else's house, so at what point am I allowed to light? And it's very in somebody else's house. It's very clear that if I'm that I light in my house. That's very clear. That's the mitzvah, right? Now, it's also very clear that if I'm eating out Friday night, so I still light in my house, right? That's also very clear. There is Shabbos, there is Hanukkah, right? Unless the person is nervous about safety, they deal with it separately. But if a person feels comfortable that even though they're not watching their lights, it'll be fine, and they're eating at Friday night, and after they eat the meal, they come back to their house, all right, good. So that's easy, all right? They're eating out both Friday and Shabbos lunch. Also, they still know where their home is, right? It's not a problem. The only question comes up is when I'm not sure where my home is for Shabbos, right? Let's say I'm moving out of my house for Shabbos. I'm going to be at, going to my parents' house for Shabbos. I'm going to my in-laws' house for Shabbos, right? Nope. So then it's also pretty clear. For that Shabbos, I'm going to be visiting my parents for Shabbos. For that Shabbos, I'm going to be eating and sleeping. Still very clear. So I live at my parents' house. Fine. Let's say I'm going to a family simcha. So I'm going to be staying overnight. Friday night, I'll be staying at somebody's home. I'll be guests of them, of one of the friends of my host. And then the meals are taking place inside the shul. It's not really complicated. What's my home for Shabbos? Right? Is my home for Shabbos the place where I'll be sleeping? I have my clothes there. Or is my home for Shabbos the place I'll be eating? Right. So the Gemara raised that question in other contexts. Gemara raised that question in the context of an Eruv. I have to, whenever we build an Eruv, you have to participate in the Eruv. Somehow, so we all participate in the same Eruv because we have a meal, two boxes of matzahs, and anybody can access any Shabbos he wants. In my basement. They're old matzahs, unless you want them, but you could. And it belongs to everybody in the neighborhood. We're matzahs to everybody in the neighborhood. Hanukkah and Pesach, we switch it over, and we can do matzahs and matzahs to everybody. If you go away for Shabbos, so I put a little note as to who has the code to our house, so you can always access these matzahs. So what happens if the person has two homes? He has a home, let's say, in Englewood, and a home in Teaneck. So which Erev does he have to participate in? The Gemara says that if you have two homes, and one home you sleep, and one home you eat, so eating is the more important activity. Contrary to... So the eating is the... So the person, to come back to our situation, a person is sleeping at somebody's house, and eating at somebody else's house. The classic case of this is with Rajbo, the case where people were really living with their in-laws, that was the case. It was living with they were eating every meal, not just Shabbos, every meal, 7 days a week. But they weren't sleeping, they were sleeping in their in-laws had a separate home for them. They had that was the case that the Rajbo was raised their Rajbo. They had a home where they ate, and then there was little homes around, little houses where they slept. So they wanted them to worship the light in Erev Hanukkah, in the place where they slept every single night, or the place where they ate every single meal. So the Rajbo writes, that's the question. So the place where you eat is your, if you have to make a choice, the place where you eat is your place for Shabbos. That's your place. That's your house. That's your bayis. So when all things are equal, we say that achila is the more important thing. Right? So, but when things are not equal, then the question, then we just go by our judgment. So for example, let's say on Sunday Hanukkah, I'm eating Sunday night at somebody else's house. But after we finish this meal, I'm coming back to my house. So we wouldn't say, well, you ate in somebody else's house and you slept at your house, so achil is more important. No, achil is only more important. Eating is more important if I'm not sure where my house is. Right? I'm spending half time in my own little place. Then we say eating is more important. Right? But if I know where my house is, so the fact that I'm eating in some other place for some period of time, that doesn't change my house, right? We always go with eating. So Rav Moshe had an interesting comment. He said, you have boys who are in a yeshiva. They eat all in the lunchroom. And they sleep in their rooms. So he thought that in that case, it sounds like you should lighten the lunchroom, right? Because hopefully these boys sleep in their room, learn the Beis Medrash, and eat the dining hall. So if pick your activity of a greater importance. Eating is the most important thing. The most thing which establishes one's home. So Rav Moshe writes, it's a chiddush, he says no. He says when the room that they're going to be sleeping in, they have more privacy in that room. Where they're eating, they're sharing with hundreds of other kids. And their bedroom they share with 400 other kids. He says, in that case, it's not an equal situation. In that case, I would argue that their dorm room is their main place. He introduced a new idea that a sense of privacy, sense of comfort can also determine things. Let's say had the question of a family that's going to a Shabbaton on Shabbos Hanukkah. So we I was visiting with last week. So I was talking about the participants, the kids who are going to be in the Shabbat home. So we're discussing where should they light. So ideally, they're not spending much time in their bedroom. Right? Their hotel, they're going to be in a hotel. Right? They're going to have hundreds of kids, Baruch Hashem. 400 kids are going to be in Tishwai Shabbat home. Tremendous thing. So they're going to, so ideally they should be spending hopefully only a few hours a night in their hotel room, we hope. Right? And then otherwise they'll be dining together, they'll be having meals together. If you look at over the course of Shabbos, where they're spending more time, hopefully in the dining room, take the three meals of Shabbos, and then the singing and the dancing, that'll be, so in that case, their ikur place again is the Mokim Mechila, the place of the eating, right? So now coming back to the situation we discussed before, let's say I go away for Shabbos. And now, let's figure this out, and we're having a bar mitzvah for the Shabbos, the whole time getting together, right? So what is the more important place of my for my Shabbos? So clearly, if we're having all the meals in the shul, that's a much more important part of my Shabbos than going to go into the house, see the host for 20 minutes before Shabbos, put the stuff down, rush out, maybe see them 10 o'clock at night, maybe see them in the morning before the shul, and maybe Motzei Shabbos when we pick up our stuff, right? So that doesn't make that suck. Two, I slept there 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours. But if you look at the course of the Shabbos, your home is much more the shul where you ate them. So where does one light Neiros Chanukah? It's true for Neiros Shabbos as well. So that is often a judgment call. When all things are equal, then if you eat in the same place all the meals, if you eat, it could be if you eat a meal in many different places, so then the place where you sleep is more of your vibe. You know, let's just summarize what we covered so far, and then we'll take questions and finish off with the other idea. We covered so far is that that women have a special place in the midst of Neiros Chanukah, as evidenced by the practice of not doing malacha, laborious work, sewing and washing during the time when the Neiros, the first half hour that the Neiros are lit. The women have a special place in the Neiros of Chanukah, and therefore they're obligated, have the same obligation as men do in the midst of Neiros Chanukah. When the rabbis and Chazal established the midst of Neiros Chanukah, they did so equally for men and for women. The question is, when it comes to practice, there is different practices. There are some women who, once they're married, continue to light their own menorah, and there's some women who stop in their own menorah and light and fulfill their obligation through the family menorah. The family menorah, because the main mitzvah is Ner Ishavesa, to have a menorah, to have Neris in one's home. So he explained there are two approaches why that happened. Either the Chassam Sofer, who said that lighting Neris is a public part of the public activity, or because we apply the rule of Vishnu Kegufa, we explained why these ideas are specific for Neris Chanukah, that they relate to other ideas as well, maybe Kiddush Levana, maybe Birchas HaGomel, and we said that if we take the approach that women don't let their own menorah once they marry Kiddush Kegufa, so then we would advocate that women, when they're single and when they're not yet bas mitzvah, they should light their own menorah. However, we also pointed out that because women are equally obligated in the mitzvah, so therefore in situations where the husband is not going to be home at an appropriate time, then you light the menorah on behalf of yourselves and the entire family. And if the husband had in mind, he knew that he won't be there at that time, he had in mind to light his own later on, he can do so with a bracha, but if he didn't have in mind to do it later on, then he has fulfilled his obligation via your lighting of the menorah. We explained that on the reverse, if you're waiting for your husband or your family to come together, it is permissible to eat. And we explained that if you're away for a good part of the night, so then whereas it's preferable, extremely preferable to light the menorah earlier, before one engages in a party or in an event, for Hanukkah. Nevertheless, in difficult situations where it's hard to disengage and we don't want to offend people or upset people, so then there is room to be lenient and to establish reminders so that, and that together with the idea that you're waiting for the family to come together would permit us to participate in this event and only later on to light the Neiros in our own home. And then we said that Sometimes the question gets raised exactly where is our home for the night of Hanukkah. All right, good question. Okay, go ahead.
So if you're going away for Shabbos and you're staying with some host and you're eating in another place, do you have to go over to that other home Friday before Shabbos, light candles over there, and then...
And that's, and it is very likely the answer is in that situation. And there's a little bit of a judgment call. In the situation where you're staying in house A, and you're going to be eating both meals, all three meals in house B. And so then we will probably say that house B is your main place for that Shabbos, and probably say that you'll, why do I say probably? There could be a situation where you're really spending most of your time in house A, and you're just going out, let's say it's a long summer Shabbos, right? And you're going out for a quick meal Friday night, and then you're going out for a meal of Shabbos lunch. But the majority of the day is spent in house A. Then we may argue that, or I'll give you another example. Let's say you're in house A, and you're eating meals in different places, right? Or you're in house A, and you're eating a meal in a restaurant, let's say. So those are situations where you might argue that you should light in house A. So probably the answer is yes. And you would go to house B and light near Shabbos there, yeah.
Even though it's like before, like you said, you could do
yeah.
it before.
Or, and then the, whenever a person lights Shabbos candles and is not being mekabel Shabbos immediately, goes up to this, then you may have to light, having in mind that you're mekabel Shabbos later on. Right, this Shabbos will light the menorah first, and then do Neir Shabbos. Right, so that we don't get involved in the problem having lit Neir Shabbos. Okay, let's say you have a situation where a single girl is lighting on her own, and she made a mistake, and she lit Neir Shabbos first. So then she has to ask somebody else to come and light her Neir Chanukah. Right, unless she had it all in mind before, but then... But that's the next scenario if she has to have like me.
Going back to if your husband's working a little late, you said that in an appropriate time, so obviously you should wait.
Yeah.
But what if it's too late for the kids? I should lie with the kids, and then... And he doesn't light, or he made up his mind to light later. I shouldn't wait, Ishoka Gufo, and light with him, and
because
just the kids
really,
do...
It's very much... very open. It's very much a judgment call.
If he's not coming home at 2 in the morning, he's coming home 10:30. It's just it's way past the kid's bedtime.
Right. So it very much depends on how it's going to work. It certainly makes sense to have the children light their own menorah and you light later on. That makes a lot of sense. If it's going to confuse the children, why are they lighting and you're not lighting, so then you can light with them. But very much, because nowadays, we are lighting primarily for inside, and lighting, and because our streets are busy so late. But let's say a person lives in a neighborhood where people are not coming home at 10:30. So then we could argue that maybe it's better for one's wife to light earlier. But it is a soft judgment polisher. What I have in mind is that sometimes the children feel either strange or if they're the only ones lighting. That's what I was thinking those terms. But that makes sense. Go ahead.
Does the husband have to think in his mind, I'm lighting on behalf of my wife, my family, or is that
the whole family's around, right? No? And even not around. When one is lighting the menorah, that's the mitzvah. Like, to that extent, it's like putting up a mezuzah. When I put it, I don't have in mind to put up a mezuzah and then I'm fulfilling everybody's obligation. The obligation is to live in a house with a mezuzah. So in that score, put up a fence because I have a deck. So I don't have in mind that I'm fulfilling everybody's obligation. I am fulfilling all our obligations. So same thing with the Neiros Chanukah. Unless one wants the reverse, let's say the reverse is where I would like to light my own menorah. So then we have to have that kind of a thought process, right? If I'm not going to get home until 10 o'clock, 10:30, and I want my wife to light earlier, then I have to have in mind that I intend to light later on. Right? It has to be part of my. It may not be a ticket. It has to be part of my thought process. But the reverse is this is my obligation to have to light my home, and it's understood that whoever lights in one's home is fulfilling that obligation.
Right, and then my other question is, if the wife is coming home much later than the husband,
right? No, the same thing. We're the same thing.
Either he can wait or she can.
Right. Another, either, I would say, depends how late. If, again, if this was in a reason, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, I would say the husband should wait. Right? The only thing is we would be tougher on him in terms of not eating. That's probably true. But you could also argue maybe he'll have to eat because he's waiting for his wife. So then we could argue that. So I think he should wait. Right? If she would come home very, very late, then again he would be lighting the menorah for his wife, right? His wife has the option if she wants to light her own menorah later on. That's the same. As long as she had that in mind, that she wants to light her menorah later on. Right? So to remove herself. But in this score, I think everything's parallel. Let's finish with an idea about Neros Hanukkah that I came across today. We'll look at it very quickly. The Gemara you have in front of you will take a few moments, but it's, and then a less technical note. This is one of the central Gemaras about Neros Hanukkah. It starts in the middle of the page, Tanarbanan Mitzvah Hanukkah Ner Ishriveso, the phrase we say many times. The Mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah is to light the menorah as a family, Ner Ishriveso. And the Hadrin, those who want to do more, and have a nicer mitzvah, Ner Lekol Echad V'Echad. They have a candle for every member of the household. And the Hadrin, Min HaMahadrin, those who want to do the mitzvah in the most beautiful way. So, Beis Shammai Arman, this is unique to Ner Hanukkah, something that's often discussed over the course of Hanukkah. This is not only the difference, not only will you be hard-pressed to find another mitzvah where there is a mahadrin or mahadrin min a mahadrin, that's number one, but number two, you'll also be hard-pressed to explain this, because heder mitzvah, usually you're only supposed to spend a third for the heder mitzvah, right? In other words, the person with a beautiful esrog, give a choice of two esrogim, so halach is, you're supposed to spend a third more than the first esrog and the second esrog, if you can afford it. Right? The person's going to do the mitzvah in a nicer way. The person has a choice of two talasim. One talas is skinny, scrawny tzitzis, but it's kosher. The other talas is nice, thick tzitzis. So, what's the halacha? Should I go for the nicer tzitzis? So the rule is, if I can afford it, and the nicer tzitzis are less than a third more of the price of the cheapest tzitzis, then yeah, I should buy it. If it's more than a third, no obligation to spend more than a third on the heather mitzvah, leaving the mitzvah in a nicer way. Right? So this is an unusual rule. Right? I light one candle on the eighth night, I could be fulfilled the mitzvah with one candle. That's it. And the hadron is to eight candles. That means I'm bumping up eight times. So Neros Hanukkah is different than other mitzvahs in that there is a two-step hidur. Chazal tells what the hidur is, how to make it more beautiful, and that the beautifying process, the hidur process, is way out of the range of normal hidur mitzvah. That's a topic that is often discussed over the course of Hanukkah. The most common answer given is by the Beis Halevi. Rav Yosef, though Halevi, number one, the first, the Rav's great-grandfather. And he says, well, because Hashem decided to do a heder mitzvah for us, right? Hashem did not have to give us the miracle. We could have had a fully functioning Beit HaMikdash. That's the rule. The rule is, if the oil is not available, so keep on going, so do everything else. And Hashem said, no, I'm going to do a heder mitzvah to the Jewish people and have them there available to them. Alright, but I want to focus on the next line. The next one is, Veishamai Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Shmona Mikan Ve'elach Poches Noholech. Veishamai says you begin with 8 and you count down, 8, 7, 6. Veishilol says, well, our practice, Yom Rishon Madlik Achas, 1, Mikan Ve'elach Mosev Oholech, keep on going up, as is our practice. What's the machlokas between Veishamai and Veishilol? So Ula explains, there is a machlekes as to what the machlekes, the debate, how to explain this. One approach is, when he explains, Trei Amarim of two Amarim in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yosef bar Oven, Rav Yosef bar Zvida. They argued, what was Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel's discussion? Chad Omar, Tamo de Beis Shammai, Kenegi Yom Nechnasin. The time of the Beis Hillel can make a Yomna Yotzin. One interpretation was, Beis Hillel says, count every day as it as you mark it. First day, one. Second day, two. Third day. As each day comes in, you note the day. Beis Shammai says, you mark the days as they go out. In other words, on the first day, I got 8 days more of Hanukkah. 7 days more of Hanukkah. 6 days more of Hanukkah. Right? That's the Machlokes Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. So then understand why one would argue why each one took their position. Then there's a second position, and that is that Beis Hillel says, Beis Shammai says, Keneged Porvei Achad, the time of the Beis Hillel, Malin B'Kodesh V'Eimer. Beis Shammai says that just like on Sukkot, we begin with 14 animals, 13 animals, 12, every day we knock off another animal, and that is to speak about times that are going to be coming up where the people who don't advocate the greatness of the Jewish people, our enemies will be knocked off one by one. And Beis Hillel says, no, our approach is Malin B'Kodesh, always increase in sanctity. So again, so what have we said? Our practice is based on the Academy of Hillel and Beis Hillel. Every day, another candle, add candles. And there's another practice, Beis Shammai. Shammai's Academy said, every day, one less. Begin the top and move down. How do we explain this kind of debate, especially in the Machlokas Beis Hillel Beis Shammai? A debate Beis Hillel and Shammai is not a debate that, it's a debate where both sides are important. It is, we possibly like Beis Hillel because there was a heavenly voice that once came out and said, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. Beis Hillel Beis Shammai are both very important parts of Torah. But we follow Beis Hillel. There's even an opinion that in times of Mashiach, we'll go with Beis Shammai. So we have to figure out what's the issue of Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. Many of you are familiar with a man who died tragically 3 years ago and was very well known in Eretz Yisrael. He used to speak often, and now his farmer coming out, Reb Shimshon Pinkas. And he had the following approach. I thought it was a very, very pretty insight. He said, to understand both sides, what both sides are expressing is that there are different approaches in the way that we raise ourselves, in the way that we train ourselves in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or in making sort of significant accomplishments. He suggests that Beis Hillel's approach was to mark the miracle of every single day. First day of Hanukkah, it was a miracle. There was a military victory. We found the oil that was otherwise sullied. The second day, it really lasted it lasted longer than it was supposed to last. Right. The third day, it lasted. I remember one of the most remarkable under the chuppah speeches that I ever heard. I still remember it every year. That's how remarkable the under the chuppah speeches get lost very, very quickly. But that and Drissim are the tough speeches because he's rushing. So one of the most remarkable ones, it was Rav Michal Twersky from Milwaukee. It was a couple that were getting married, and the young man had already, it was already on in his years when they got married, and they got married the second night of Hanukkah. So Rav Michal said that at this point in time, like the second night of Hanukkah, he says, that's when the Jews began to realize that a miracle is happening in their midst. I think they're not speaking with Chassan and Kala. But that's a remarkable thing. But that's really what's happening. The second night of Hanukkah marks a very important time. This is just began to realize something strange is happening. Right? Third night, even more. Fourth night. So Beis Hillel says, when one wants to mark, when one wants to establish growth, so it's important to celebrate one's accomplishments. Right? A person completes a Masech, the Masech is Brachos, make a party, make a Siyum. A child finishes learning Parshas Gracious. A child is able to read Rashi. A child becomes Barabbas Mitzvah. The Hillel's approach is that the way that we grow is by marking the days as they come, marking our celebrating our accomplishments. The Shammai's approach is the way that a person grows is realizing we have another 8 days to go, right? We have to make it, if we really want to have a significant event, so we have to make sure that the miracle lasts another 8 days. The miracle has another 7, otherwise it's a miracle for a day, and then we're several days without the menorah again. So the Shammai's approach is, what's the goal that we have to get to? So these are two different approaches in our own growth, in our own sense of accomplishment. The Shammai's approach is that on the first day of Hanukkah, so then a person realizes they are in a much better position to achieve the that ultimate goal they want to accomplish. The second day of Hanukkah, so the person's even in a better position to achieve. Because Baruch Hu's taking care of me, more with it. You're in a better position to even daven the things that we want. That's Beis Shammai's approach. That a person will continuously reevaluate how much more they have to go to get to that the goal. But that's the way that Beis Shammai says, that's the way a person grows in their avodas Hashem, in their service of Hashem. What do I want to accomplish? What's the goal? Now, that's be clearly in mind. What kind of person do I want to become? What midos have to work on? How much more time I have to spend learning? What I have to do more for my children, more for myself? And then I look at what's happened, and how can what's happened put me in a better position to accomplish what I got to accomplish? And Beis Shammai says that's an idealist approach. That's for Imos HaMashiach. That our approach nowadays is what works better for us, and maybe Beis Shammai works for some people. But what's better for most people is to something has been accomplished, celebrate the accomplishment. You have a much better chance of building further by not counting. Elu ve'elu divrei Kol Chayim, both are approaches. Both work for different kinds of people. But Klal Yisrael has accepted that what works better for most people is to celebrate every single opportunity that we have to celebrate. And by doing so, so we develop a sense of confidence, we develop a greater appreciation for Hashem Baruch Hu's concern for us, and as we celebrate, whether it's accomplishments in study, or accomplishments in doing mitzvahs, or accomplishments in our own midos, or relationships, but if we're able to stop every so often and say, I messed up on this one, I say, I did the right thing this time, right? I basically feel good. I got a good reaction from one of my kids. So then, these are important moments to stop and reflect about ourselves, and also reflect about those for whom we are in charge. So thank you for coming out this evening. I know it's a day that everyone's very, very busy, and the Shalom of Hanukkah. Yes.